Welcome back, Mets fans, to another week of Raise the Apple. And there is a lot going on over the last couple weeks in Mets land. You had the Nimmo trade, which you talked about last week. You have this alleged locker room drama that the Mets have. And the Mets have also added Devin Williams. So we're going to talk about all of it and then a couple other moves that have gone on around the league, starting with kind of a week or two later with the Brandon Nimmo trade and how much it still sucks that the Mets actually traded Brandon Nimmo. Nimmo had his introductory press conference with Texas yesterday, and it is just sucks. It doesn't look right seeing him in a different uniform. The trade itself, it's for me with this trade, it was not, I didn't have a problem with the Mets getting Marcus Semien. The problem I had was with giving up Brandon Nimmo to get Marcus Semien. But when you look at the baseball side of it, unfortunately, it does make a little bit of sense. I still wish the Mets did not make this trade. But at the end of the day, I mean, if this is the direction, I mean, that core that we talked about last time, McNeil, Alonso, Lindor, Nimmo, one of those guys was probably going to be gone because they needed a shakeup. One of those guys, and a lot of people are talking about McNeil, who we'll talk about in a little bit. I understand that it was time to shake things up. I just wish it wasn't Nimmo. I think Nimmo had a chance at Mets history and have his number 9 hung up in the rafters. So seeing this trade happen just still stings a little bit, but also, from the baseball side, after the emotional side calms down a little bit, you see it and you're like, okay, that it makes more sense on the Mets side why they decided to do this move. Also, another move the Mets brought in was Devin Williams. The airbender is coming from the Yankees to the Mets on a 3-year deal, $45 million. There is a lot to unpack with this as well. The first thing is, that jumps out to everyone, what does this mean with Edwin Diaz? This does not mean anything regarding the Mets' plans on trying to keep Edwin Diaz. A lot of people thought that, oh, Devin Williams is going to be the backup option, you know, in case they can't keep Diaz, which is probably true. But the Mets have to basically rework that entire bullpen. And if you could take off a couple of innings, especially with the starting rotation, not knowing what direction the Mets are going to go, I think that's a great thing, because at the back end of this bullpen, if you don't keep Diaz, right now you got Brooks Raley back there, you got Devin Williams back there, you have arms to lock up some innings, and if you could get Edwin Diaz back, there's a third of the game right there that you have locked up. So I fully expect the Mets to continue fixing this bullpen. I think Edwin Diaz, the Mets are still one of, if not the favorites, to keep Edwin Diaz. And if you can get him in there, and Devin Williams turns back into Milwaukee Brewers Devin Williams, which his Yankees tenure for the first probably two-thirds of the season was brutal, but towards the end of the year, he was much, much better and started to pitch like Devin Williams. So if you're getting that Devin Williams paired with Diaz at the back end of the bullpen, I like that. And Brooks Raley in the seventh, you have a third of the game already covered right there, essentially. So I don't think this was as bad of a trade, or not trade, wow, as bad of a free agent signing as a lot of Mets fans think, because it also covers them if Edwin Diaz signs elsewhere. They have the ninth inning lockdown. They have a guy who's been a closer, who has closer experience. And I just think this was a great move for the Mets. I think this was a much needed thing to address in the bullpen, because that bullpen is basically getting overhauled. Same potentially with the starting rotation, but we'll wait and see on that. But definitely the bullpen needs to be a higher priority to me, at least. And bringing in Devin Williams was just, to me, a great get for the Mets. And I hope that they could keep Diaz around, because that would be a nasty eighth inning, ninth inning punch into the bullpen. But what the Mets are going to have to do, potentially, is make some hard decisions because apparently we have some locker room drama. Don't know how much of this I believe. Don't know what I believe. But if you haven't seen it, you definitely have seen it by now, but just in case you haven't, there was a New York Post article that essentially said the Mets had some locker room issues. McNeil and Lindor got into it in Philly over the summer. Soto and McNeil have a chilly relationship. I think it's all a bunch of crap. Now, with Lindor and Soto, because that's the easier one to talk about, Lindor is a very flashy player. Soto is a very business-like player. Soto is very business-oriented when it comes to baseball. I don't understand why that means they have a chilly relationship. That's just two different ways of playing the game. Lindor, again, very flashy player. Soto's not like that. That's fine. I don't care. I think most Mets fans don't care. And I don't know why the national media seems to think that people care. You know, it's giving more fuel to Yankees fans who, oh, that's why Juan Soto didn't have a chilly relationship with Aaron Judge. It has nothing to do with anything. It was a very clickbaity, ragebaity type article. And then that, not so much on the side of the McNeil Lindor stuff, because this is not the first time that Lindor and McNeil have gotten into it. If you remember in 2021, the alleged rat and raccoon incident in the stairwell of the dugout, where it came out after the fact that Lindor and McNeil got into a physical altercation and the team had to break them up, but then McNeil and Lindor told the media that they were deciding if an animal was a rat or a raccoon, kind of saving face a little bit for both of them. Here's the thing. What non-athletes don't understand, if you're an athlete, you get this. I was an athlete for half my life at this point. You do not have to be best buddies with every single teammate you have. You're going to have teammates that you're best buddies with, and you're going to have teammates that you just don't get along with. That's okay. That's normal. That's expected. The difference is, as long as you are working together on the field and you have the same goal in mind off the field, who cares? I don't care. As long as on the field, McNeil and Lindor are working together, they're doing everything they can to help the Mets win a World Series, I don't care if they're not buddy-buddy outside of the field. I don't know why anyone would care about that. It doesn't matter. You don't need to be best buds with every single teammate you have. Now, Lindor, this is not the first time Lindor has been involved in quote-unquote locker room drama. You know, the rat and raccoon stuff. The alleged incident with Jason Kipnis in Cleveland. The thumbs down stuff when Javi Baez and Marcus Stroman were at the Mets, which I don't think was Lindor. I think that was definitely more Stroman and Javier Baez. And McNeil has kind of built the reputation of being a little bit of a hothead. With that, when you have clashing personalities like that, sometimes when you're frustrated and when you're losing, that happens. You get into it a little bit with your teammates. Winning solves everything. If the Mets are winning, this is a non-story. But because 2025 was such a disappointment, that's why this becomes a story. And that's why it's in the front headlines of everything. And everyone's talking about, oh, what's going on? Mendoza doesn't have a hold on the clubhouse, this and that. And then you see Buck Showalter yesterday getting interviewed and saying that it was essentially saying it was kind of getting blown out of proportion a little bit, because when he was the manager for the Mets, he had McNeil and Lindor, and there wasn't an issue or any issues like that. So I think a lot of it has to play with how successful the team is doing. Sometimes when things aren't going well, because this was the alleged incident was at the start of the summer when the Mets were playing the Phillies. This, the start of the summer, was kind of the start of the fall of the Mets 2025 season. So when you look at it from that end, winning solves everything. When you're losing, everything tends to go wrong. Nothing goes your way. You start getting mad at each other. You may snap on a teammate or this or that. And I also stand on this point. If McNeil, because everyone wants to stick up for Lindor and everyone wants to put all the blame on McNeil. If McNeil's attitude was this much of a problem, I firmly believe that Steve Cohen and David Stearns would have addressed it by now, whether it's trading him, cutting him, whatever the case is. I feel confident the Mets would have disciplined McNeil by now if his attitude was that much of a problem as it is being made out to be. Now, could I be very wrong on that? Probably, but the locker room vibes that, you know, we saw in 2024 and the past couple years since Steve Cohen took over the team, I find it hard to believe that he would let Jeff McNeil stick around if he was going to be that much of a problem. Part of it is just the general competitiveness. Jeff McNeil is a very competitive guy. And when you're a very competitive person and things don't start going your way and you get frustrated, sometimes emotions tend to show a little bit, or you have, again, what we saw with Lindor, allegedly, you have incidents with your teammates that happen. That's part of sports. The general consensus of this is not, I think you would be surprised, I think baseball fans and sports fans in general would be shocked if they were in the locker room for one day with their favorite team and realized that not every single guy is buddy-buddy with each other. If you look at the Dodgers and Blue Jays, who just went to one of the best World Series this century, I guarantee you that not every single guy in that clubhouse on either side, the Dodgers or the Blue Jays, is buddy-buddy with each other. I guarantee you there are a couple guys that don't get along with each other, especially when you got big contracts involved, especially when you got big egos involved because of those contracts. Sometimes heads can butt a little bit. We saw it with Juan Soto's time in San Diego. The rumors of the toxic locker room because of, you know, you had Soto and Machado and Tatis. You had all these big name guys with a lot of money tied to them. Who's the top dog in there? Sometimes the ego kind of takes over a little bit. But I thought it was much of a nothing burger. I don't put too much stock into it. More I put into the stock of winning solves everything. If the Mets made the playoffs, even just made the playoffs, let alone how far they went in the postseason, this story doesn't come out, I don't think. It's weird that a lot of people are saying Nimmo's the anonymous source just because of the timing of it. But to me, when they have an altercation in July, it is December now, but at the time the story was released, it was the end of November. Why now? That's why a lot of people are saying that Nimmo may be the source of it, just because of the timing of it. It's just, I don't, like, how? Why do you expect me to care about something that happened in July 6 months later? I don't. I'm not going to put a lot of thought into it. I think this was a non-story, especially with the Lindor Soto stuff. I don't understand why that was kind of thrown in there. But alas, it's never a dull moment being a New York Mets fan. You know, trading away Nimmo and bringing in Devin Williams, and everyone's freaking out. What does this mean about Edwin Diaz? And now you have, apparently, Lindor and McNeil hate each other, and Lindor and Soto don't like each other. Could it be Lindor? It could be. I don't think it is, but it could be. I think you would be surprised if you really were in the locker room with players, how much some of them get along and how much some of them just don't get along with each other. It's going to be a fun offseason for the Mets, to say the least, especially next week with the winter meetings, you know, with McNeil being brought up and Senga and apparently Jonah Tong for a potential Joe Ryan trade. Not Sonny Gray. That's what we're going to talk about in a second. Edwin Diaz and Pete Alonso. All these potential moves the Mets could be a part of and be in. That is what's going to make or break this offseason. I still stand by, you have to keep Pete. You have to keep Edwin. And I would like to get another starter or maybe another bat. I don't think the Mets are going to get Tucker. I think the Mets, I don't really know how the Mets are going to address the outfield, because I think they're more likely going to let Jet Williams or Carson Bench kind of duke it out potentially for that last outfield spot. But I still think keeping Pete and keeping Edwin Diaz has got to be a top priority for this team. Now, we're going to wrap up this episode kind of jumping around the league. Two former Mets got new homes. Ryan Helsley signs a two-year deal with the Orioles, and Cedric Mullins signs a one-year deal with the Rays. Cedric Mullins, 2025 was just a year to forget for him. At face value, it was a good trade. It was a nice trade for the Mets. It just didn't work simply because it was just a down year for Mullins. And it was a down year for him in Baltimore. You think maybe, oh, change of scenery, get him to Queens, and then he'll figure it back out to get to his old self. That didn't happen. It was just a nightmare for Cedric Mullins in Queens. On the plus side, though, the Mets didn't have to give up a whole lot for him. Same with Ryan Helsley. Helsley's Mets tenure started off awful. Towards the end of the year, he was much better. He had an interesting offseason where, you know, the Tigers were interested in making him a starter. Would the Mets take a chance in bringing him back? I'm glad the Mets kind of didn't, but I love this move for the Orioles because they're addressing their needs. They brought in Taylor Ward. They needed another bat. They brought in Taylor Ward. They needed a bullpen arm. They brought in Helsley. Now they need to go get a starter. I forgot Felix Bautista was injured, but he could come back at the end of 2026. It's not likely, but he could. If you get a healthy Felix Bautista back, you have a bounce back year from Yennier Cano. Helsley, just forget everything that happened in Queens and reset in Baltimore. That's a solid 7th, 8th, 9th that the Orioles have. You know, similar to the Mets, if they keep Diaz where they have Diaz, Williams, and Brooks Raley, you have the 7th, 8th, and you have a third of the game locked down right now. Once Bautista comes back healthy if you're Baltimore. So I like this move for the Orioles. The Rays are the Rays. They're going to find ways to win. Hopefully Cedric Mullins can salvage something and kind of reset a little bit. Some guys are just not big market guys. They like their smaller market players, and that's fine. Helsley, maybe he's just not a big market guy. Same with Cedric Mullins. They like, you know, kind of flying under the radar in the smaller market teams. I personally don't have a problem with that. If that's the way they do it, that's the way they do it, which is going to be the interesting thing to see with a guy like Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray gets traded to the Red Sox. I like this move for the Red Sox because they needed some rotation help. I think he can slot in nicely in that two-hole behind Garrett Crochet. Maybe the Red Sox go get another starter and Sonny Gray gets bumped to the three spot. But I think Sonny Gray, outside of his time with the Yankees, Sonny Gray has had a very nice career. He has very low-key been under the radar. He finished, third in the Cy Young in his last year with the Twins, I think it was. Third in the Cy Young. Or his first year with Twins or something. One of his years with the Twins, he was third in the Cy Young. He's still got some arm left on him. Now, with his time being in the big market with the Yankees, it was a nightmare. Going back to regroup with the Twins and the Reds and the Cardinals, he's fared a lot better. Now he's going back into a big market in Boston. How is that going to translate? You know, there's the comments that Sonny Gray made where apparently he never wanted to be a Yankee. Finding it interesting that all these guys that once they leave the Yankees, they talk about how much they hated being a Yankee. Just throwing that out there. But from the Red Sox side, I think they got a great arm. And I do expect the Red Sox to do a little bit more this offseason. I know they're in the Pete Alonso mix. I know they're in the mix for Schwarber. So I think they'll definitely add another bat. Hope it's Schwarber instead of Pete, but we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think getting Sonny Gray was a great addition to their rotation. I think he's going to fit nicely in that two or three spot behind Crochet. And overall, just a solid move. Another AL East team that's making big moves is the Toronto Blue Jays, getting Dylan Cease to a massive, massive deal, over $200 million. A lot of people are calling overpay. I don't necessarily think it's an overpay. I think Dylan Cease just needed a change of scenery. So going from the White Sox, then to San Diego, now going to Toronto. I think Dylan Cease, his dominance in San Diego just ran out, and it was time for him to move on. And I think that Toronto is a perfect spot for him. He's going to fit in awesome in that rotation with Gausman, with Yusevich, depending on what they do with Jose Berrios. I mean, they have the Blue Jays got some legit options in the rotation. And adding Dylan Cease, it's finally nice to see the Blue Jays land a free agent, because it seems like every offseason they're begging players to take their money, and none of them will. And finally, Dylan Cease will take it, and it is a fantastic addition to the Blue Jays rotation. If you look at the AL East, the Rays are the Rays. They don't typically make a lot of big moves, but you got the Red Sox and Blue Jays making moves. The Orioles are making moves. The Yankees are kind of just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, not sure what they're doing. You know, they've already lost Devin Williams. They could lose Cody Bellinger. Yankees looking a little exposed. Yankees are trying to make money, trying not to lose money, or whatever it was that Hal Steinbrenner said the other day. But again, it has been a very slow start to the offseason, but I think next week when the winter meetings pick up, things are going to start moving a little quicker. I think Tucker and Schwarber, Bellinger, Pete, Edwin, all those guys start finding homes, or we start getting a little more traction into what's going on with their status. But right now, looking at the Mets, I like bringing in Semien. Still don't like bringing up Nimmo. I don't know if I ever will. Adding Devin Williams, I like this move if the Mets keep Diaz. If they don't keep Diaz, then I like this move a lot less. But again, there's a lot of offseason left to go. A lot of things can change. A lot can happen on the Mets front and across Major League Baseball. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and I anticipate things picking up a lot next week when the winter meetings kick off. But that's going to wrap it up for this week on Raise the Apple, kind of catching up on a couple of the moves that the Mets have made, a couple of moves that have happened around Major League Baseball. And for the love of God, if the Mets can stay out of the news in a negative way for more than 30 seconds, that would be greatly appreciated. Make sure you follow on Twitter at @Zach_now. Make sure you follow on TikTok at @RTA_pod. And make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on YouTube. And we will see you guys next week. Let's go, Mets.